Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Michael Bauer. Michael is the founder and CEO of Nyla. Nyla is a full end-to-end, front-end, headless solution for Shopify. It is a low-code slash no-code solution with an inbuilt page builder and editor and a whole ton of out-of-the-box integrations with Shopify's most popular apps. He decided to build this to create a solution for everybody that wanted to have a really seamless, easy to use, easy to deploy, easy to modify, headless front-end solution for Shopify. We had a great conversation about where he believes the future of no-code and low-code lies, and I hope you enjoy. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Pod. It is my extreme pleasure to welcome Michael Bauer from Nyla to the podcast. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Matt, we were just talking about off air that I am from near where you are living in Temecula.
Yeah, exactly. I'm from San Diego, moved to Colorado for 8 years, moved back last year, and I was thinking of putting Temecula as my LinkedIn location. And I was like, Temecula, nobody knows what that is. So I'm in Los Angeles metropolitan.
Yeah. Temecula, and in particular, the Temecula Valley, but green, semi-rural, beautiful. We can see it in your background there, which is not a virtual background. It's a legit, real background with lots of green and Temecula Valley and obviously wine country and just so many cool things where you're at now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you on board for the ride today. And I want to talk about Nyla and talk about what you do and everything like that. But before we get into this, how did you even get into this crazy industry of e-commerce? You've been doing Nyla for over 4.5 years now. You were formerly with Gamma Waves, and you've been, I guess we would call nowadays, they use this term serial entrepreneur. But what dragged you into the e-commerce space?
Great question. And I'd love to know the same for you. So I'm an e-commerce junkie. Out of high school, I knew a bunch of friends and people that were just trying to figure out how do you take advantage of this new thing called e-commerce. And I was like helping people basically. And then very quickly being like a jack of all trades handyman, if you will, for small business, I was like, wait a second, I don't have to go on location if I simply have a Cat 5 cable, my big old CRT monitor, and log me in, if you remember that, log me in. The hilarious situation. I remember doing like Illustrator and Photoshop work on people's computers in their office from my house over a 3G connection.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, but the reason I got into e-commerce was I had this sensation that there was something here that was really special in the sense that it wasn't heavily regulated. And I think regulation's great. Like you need to have the right kind of regulations, and the industry started to self-regulate in some really good ways. But at the time it was like the Wild West, which is like fun for all kinds of reasons, right? And my brother-in-law, Wallace Miller, shout out to Wallace, he got me into it actually. I was working with him, doing some development with him, and he's like, hey, you should really focus on e-commerce. And it went from there.
Wow, that's so exciting. Yeah, man, I tell you, I don't know how old you are. I'm 49 years old. I turned 50 years old this year. I've been in this e-commerce game for over 20 years now. And I remember back in the beginning, pretty much everything about e-commerce was difficult, right? There was a few platforms, yeah. There was OS Commerce, and there was a few other things, but there were a lot of bespoke websites being built. We were the first agency I worked inside of. We had one of the first SaaS. We didn't call it SaaS, but it was hosted. It was just called we just called it an out-of-the-box e-commerce platform. I think that's just what we called it. We just said,
did you use the OOTB? Did you use any acronym or anything?
I think we just said, hey, we've got this e-commerce platform. You can load your products into via web browser and you can start selling straight away. And so this was pre-SaaS and pre-everybody saying, this is the new wave of how software was going to be delivered across the board. And it was multi-tenant and it was all very modern architecture at the time. We also had our own SaaS CMS platform at the time. It was the agency that I was working for at the time, they were part of or underneath an umbrella of a hosting company. So we did web hosting as well as we had these platforms that we had to get people up and running quickly if they wanted to. And then laterally, we found OS Commerce and then we started developing on that. But we had a we had a sister agency that was literally on the same floor as us in the same building. And they were building everything bespoke from scratch and a lot of websites built in Flash. And of course, this was, and so that was my introduction to the e-commerce industry. It was super, super cool. But man, just everything was difficult. Everything from payment gateways to security to hosting, scalability, even just the catalog structure and the database structures that you needed to have and being able to, a lot of these bespoke websites, they would need bespoke promotional functionality. They would need bespoke catalog functionality with bespoke attribute support. There was just so much that you needed to build from scratch back in the day that when, obviously, when OS Commerce and Magento, latterly Magento, and some of these other out-of-the-box platforms that had all of the core commerce components, man, that just dramatically accelerated e-commerce adoption, didn't it?
Yeah, totally did. When I started my agency back in the day, it used to be called Selry, S-E-L-R-Y, which is a play on words. It's a little long in the tooth now, so we just rebranded it to Gamma Waves. But yeah, I was like, wow, Magento was like a free Ferrari. It's free if you use the open source version at the time. And then you get into it, you're like, whoa, this isn't free at all. The maintenance on the Ferrari is not cheap. And not to diminish Magento, Magento is an incredible platform. You can do so many things with it that are even advanced for other platforms now. But I was like, this is amazing. So for 10 years, our thing was, hey, we're going to be SEAL Team 6 for Magento. Like, we're going to be able to do anything with Magento. We honestly, like, we used it for things that probably wasn't the best choice for, but we got really good at it and like enjoyed that. And then I remember this point, to your point about like, it was so hard, everything was hard, but then eventually the tech wasn't the hardest part anymore, at least for like mainstream e-commerce. And that was a really interesting moment for me to go, wow, like you could just feel it. Wow, what people are willing to pay for and what they need is actually different now. It was a good moment, but it's also a soul searching moment for me to say, okay, now what are we going to do?
Yeah, my second agency that I helped work in and build up over time was a Magento Gold Partner agency. And so that was really where I cut my teeth probably the most from a deep architectural understanding, from a business analysis perspective, from a solution architecture perspective, from an integration architecture perspective. I really cut my teeth in that world. And Magento was an absolute game changer at that time. It certainly brought e-commerce to the masses in a way I hadn't seen with any other e-commerce platform. But then latterly, you wear the pain. You actually don't even realize that the platform is causing you pain until you see an alternative. And what I realized after working in the Magento ecosystem for years and years, we took on as an agency, we took on BigCommerce as a second platform that we supported. And I remember the first time I was tasked with configuring the back end of the platform for my client. And I remember it took me only 2 hours to configure everything in the back end for my client and to be able to get the products uploaded and the configurations and the product variants and the all of the customer attributes that we wanted to collect and all of the apps that we wanted to run and all that sort of stuff. And I did it without a developer. I'm a non-developer, but I'm a highly technical non-developer. And as soon as I did that for the very, very first time, our dev team said, look, when you get stuck, if you get stuck, we'll come and see us and we'll help you do whatever you need to get done in the back end. And at the end of that, and we did some front-end customization on the website, but I realized right then and there, this is the future of commerce. This right here is the future of commerce. This is how all software is going to be eventually. It's going to be this easy to administer. It's going to be this easy to configure. It's going to be this easy to integrate with. And I knew that the world of commerce had changed forever, coming from that long history with Magento. And then, of course, I got introduced to the Shopify ecosystem and all the other SaaS platforms that are common today. And man, it was a colossal shift. And that shift is still happening. And I still see on-prem dying a slow, painful death. Are you seeing the same thing?
I am. I also think that the adoption curve that I'm mostly focused on right now is, or the part of the adoption curve, let's say, is the early majority. I think e-commerce, I could be totally wrong on this, but I think e-commerce is about 5 to 10 years behind the rest of the internet. And a lot of this I'm going to attribute to Flash is really awesome. And if we had been able to continue using things like Flash, e-commerce was on a trajectory to just stay incredibly cool. But what happened was with the emergence of HTML5 and these standards of making things not vendor lock specific, everything had to be rebuilt essentially because there wasn't a lot of venture money coming into commerce and D2C at the time. And it was like, basically it grew really slowly for a period to where now we're still playing catch up with the rest of the internet. And I think that that's okay, but it's also like something that I want to change. E-commerce should be like the coolest part of the internet, I think. And it can be, it will be. But for example, one thing I love to do is look at emerging stuff from another industry. Let's say gaming. I love the gaming industry, not because I'm a gamer. I'm a totally like terrible wannabe gamer, but I watch other people who are gamers go, wow, that, like this is actually athletics. You have to build muscle mass to be able to do this clicking and moving and so on. But the thing that I love about games the most is the UI. The UI is so amazing with properly built games. People naturally, they're not being paid to have to use the game. Like, therefore, the game designers go, let's see, how do we make this fun? And I love saying, how can you take an element of gaming UI and bring that, not like gamification, not the psychology, that's great and all, but the actual UI. How do you take gaming UI and stick that into a commerce situation? Or how do you, I don't know, another example, how do you, what's a super minimalist situation with commerce? We actually did this experiment where we tried going ultra minimalist, and what we found is conversion rate, it went up and up, and then it went down after a certain point. Because like, if you're in a commerce environment, you actually have to persuade somebody to buy something potentially. You can't have just like a blank page with your logo, let's say, or a product. You actually have to reasons to buy and proof points, all this stuff. We're trying to mimic a real world experience of purchasing and engaging, like learning about a brand and feeling a part of something. We're doing experience creation when we're doing commerce. And commerce has this transaction that's really just like a trigger or an indicator to you of, am I doing the right thing? Is this working? So imagine a brand where there's no transactions. It would be like the world of academia. I'm going to throw ideas out into the world and I'm never really going to know if they work or not.
Yep.
That's why we're going to back to your first question. The real reason I love commerce is because we get to try ideas in real time and see almost immediately whether or not they work.
Whether they're market relevant. And it's the same with all of content, right? At the end of the day, if you produce a podcast, you might think it's the greatest podcast in the world, but people, if they don't like it and they don't share it, then it dies a pretty quick death. And that's it's true of any kind of user interface or anything that we put out there in the world that has a creative element to it, because I think that ultimately commerce is creative. Ultimately, commerce is an expression of creativity, but it's really just a friendly face on top of logistics. That's really what it is. We're putting a very consumer friendly and hopefully a very consumer engaging face on what is ultimately a logistics game, because that's what commerce is. It's moving goods and services from one place to another and getting them into the right people's hands that actually want those goods and services. And that, I guess, that fast forward to Nyla. And Nyla, as I understand it, is FEAAS, front end as a service for Shopify. So effectively, if you've hitched your wagon to the headless horse, so to speak, when it comes to Nyla. And for those that don't know what headless is, why don't you describe how you describe headless to other people?
Sure. So headless is an unfortunate term. First of all, I think it sounds terrible. But there was a concept that was popularized in the 80s around the idea of decoupling architectures, so that you have my customer stuff is over here and my product catalog's over here. You might think of it as like different parts of your car engine. They're distinguishable essentially, but you can bring them together and switch them out. And that interoperability was a big thing from an architecture, and it still is a big thing in architecture design. But it was basically like a software engineering thing that architects and engineers thought about. And then there was some work, and I'm gonna shout out to Commerce Tools actually, and some folks like that who did a really good job of bringing together a microservices, is what the term was, architecture that you could bring towards your application design into commerce. And there's a ton of benefits without going into great detail about having distributed or decouplable architectures in software, but the e-commerce industry wasn't really ready for that. And there's a ton of reasons for that, but suffice it to say that the practicality element, like we're saying in e-commerce, is extremely high. Things need to be able to work and work quickly and work readily and work affordably in commerce. Otherwise, they're just not going to really, what I was looking at, from this being the Shopify ecosystem at the time, this is about 5 years ago, was saying, I wonder why modern e-commerce front-end technology is not really being adopted at a very fast clip. So my agency, we did a bunch of testing and found see, we can make a super fast front end using headless, and I'll get to my sort of explanation of what I think that should be called now in a minute. But basically, like the fastest of the fastest technologies that we could find and drop into a site. And we did that. And then what we would find is customers would switch back to normal Shopify theme within a year or so, because, and I didn't know what the reason was, but headless basically takes the back end, or let's say the sort of engine or brains behind a business, and then creates a very nice clean separation between that and then whatever technology you want to use for your front end. And that front end could be using all kinds of different varieties of form factors. You could have it an audio interface, which some have done. You could do a next generation TV purchasing environment. You could even do something within a game. And basically it just allows your front end and your back end to communicate via a standard such as an API. It makes it easier to maintain both sides of the architecture. And this works really well for if you're doing something at large scale or needing to be able to work with a whole bunch of different varieties of form factors. And it basically means that your backend can be super duper modern while your front end is also super duper modern, while being able to use different vendors and architectures for each piece. The where the rubber meets the road though, is that you're dealing with more than one thing now. In fact, you're dealing with your backend and your front end and potentially other bits. And then you have to have some holistic concept that brings it all together. And that's usually where the rub is with microservices technologies and headless specifically. What we decided to do with Nilo was say, you know what, how do we make front end simpler? How do we do like a modern front end that's actually simpler to manage than what you're used to? And without going into that just yet, that's what we aim to do with Nilo.
Yeah, and look, that makes sense. And look, I think there's multiple ways of delivering that front end platform. It can be completely custom. It can be a platform that's self-hosted. It can be a SaaS front end platform. Just as when we think of headless versus a monolithic system. So if I go and I build my website on Shopify today and I use their standard, you know, liquid theme engine on the front end and it's coupled directly to the back end, there's no API connectivity between the two because it's making direct database calls because they're usually co-located on the same server or at least the same cluster. And so therefore there is no need for the front end to communicate with the back end via API because it's got a direct connection to the back end. And so I think Shopify has tried to go headless and is starting to try to go headless on their own platform. Many platforms are now starting to go headless on their own platform for the reasons you described. Gives a more freedom, more flexibility, faster performance on the front end. You can build lighter weight storefronts. You can connect everything via APIs. And the vast majority of these platforms already have the API layer available anyway. So Shopify's already got an API layer. It's already got GraphQL. So does BigCommerce. So does VTech. So do all the major. So does Adobe Commerce. They've all got the API layer available anyway to facilitate a headless implementation. Because even historically, before there was this standard term of headless, there were commerce environments where you needed to create a custom front end. It might have been a kiosk in a store. It might have been, it could be a touchscreen interface in a store, right? So it could be a point of sale system where you wanted to expose your standard commerce system in a point of sale environment. So there, even before headless became a common terminology and became a common design pattern, we had certain commerce environments that did not work with the traditional e-commerce monolithic front-end experience. And so I think what I want to try to make it clear, just for the sake of trying to make this as simple for everyone else to understand, what Nilo does is it basically says, okay, in the same way that you consume Shopify today, and you don't have to worry about the hosting, you don't have to worry about the infrastructure, you don't have to worry about the security, you don't have to worry about the scalability, you don't have to worry about any of those things, you pay your subscription fee and Shopify takes care of the rest, you're doing the exact same thing, but for the front end environment. So you're saying, hey, we're going to provide the infrastructure. We're going to provide the theme language. We're going to provide all that stuff. We're going to provide these core components, this drag and drop UI, this no code, low code environment. We're going to provide all of that. And you don't have to worry about the server that it sits on. You don't have to worry about scalability. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. We're going to own that piece, but it allows you now to implement a completely custom front-end environment that is not hosted by Shopify, but yet get all the benefits of the Shopify backend, that familiar Shopify backend that we all know and love. They can worry about the catalog. They can worry about the promotion engine. They can worry about all those default integrations that they have in the ecosystem. And we're going to worry about that front-end experience that customers are exposed to.
That's a really great pitch for Nyla. Thank you. So we found that brands wanted to be able to start with great boilerplate and iterate from there. So if you go out and say, hey, I want to redesign my site or I want to do a new site, there's typically a large amount of time that goes into, maybe you buy a boilerplate or a skeleton theme, or maybe you don't, build from scratch, but there's all this work that goes into just getting up to baseline. And we thought, by definition, baseline means we know what baseline is, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't call it baseline. So what would it take to start with baseline? And I don't mean start with a theme that looks like a theme, because nobody wants a site that looks like another site, right? Start with the building blocks that will allow you to progress. And this is very similar to like when React components came out as a term, and we loved that. We loved it. It's the same reason I like Legos. I love the analogy of 3D printing versus Legos. So let's say you're, say, I'm a 3D printing nerd. I can make stuff, and it's going to have those little ridges, but it's going to be any shape I can possibly imagine in 3D. And they can even 3D print concrete and metal and all this stuff. That's great. Problem is, Legos you build faster, they're cheaper, they're actually stronger in most cases. I guess not metal, but we know what to expect with Legos. And yeah, it makes it such a powerful thing where you can build together. And so we were just like, what if you were able to start with a high baseline, and that most of your time and energy went into going way above baseline? So we thought, okay, let's see. If you're going to build physical retail solutions in this day and age, you wouldn't have to swing a hammer. No, you'd show up and everything would be ready to go. And by the way, I love coding. I'm probably the world's worst coder, but I love code. But I thought, over time, abstractions evolve in worlds of engineering where your quote-unquote code, or the thing that you actually change that is complicated and requires subject matter expertise, that area or that area of knowledge evolves along with the industries. And so the next level of coding, or what happens after having to write code for everything, we've already seen that happen in machine learning. If you're a data scientist these days, you're not writing your own algorithms most of the time. You might be tweaking them, but mostly you're using tooling and pipelines and analysis apparatus that allow you to move very quickly. Same thing with even gaming, which has technically like more need for things like memory management than e-commerce. And so our thought was like, I wonder if you could start with a high baseline, and then what would that mean? So for us, we decided this is going to be full no code. And so now it's actually full no code, meaning you can assemble an entire website without having to write code. And I think that is really cool because A, I didn't know if it was going to work. It does. But B, it means that you can assemble things far more quickly and with a broader set of colleagues, which means that if you hire an intern or your marketing team, they can just start building what they need up to some edges. Like maybe they'll need some help from some more advanced builders. And Nyla, we have this designation of, are you a builder, just like your Webflow or visual composer type person, right? Or a coder. Engineers are fantastic at using no code and low code tools. Because A, they know how to build them, and therefore they know how the no-code tools think. But B, they know how to think like engineers. And so I propose that there's a future-facing term called the builder, or maybe there's better terms that we can come up with, but that combines the idea of engineering, but engineering using not just frameworks, but like whole scaffolding systems that allow us to assemble things with far greater ease. And all the engineers out there that maybe don't love no code tools, I would say, A, I'm right there with you. Like they're new, but B, some of them are getting really good to where you could actually do what you need to do from an engineering standpoint better, faster, potentially smarter, and with more scalability in mind. Example, with Nyla sites, you have a many to many situation going on. So you can create a new component, let's call it. And then you could say, oh, I really like this one. This is converting better, or I just like how it looks. And then you can very easily cross-apply that, not only to just anywhere in that site, but you can copy-paste that to any other site you're working on. Mm-hmm. And it will inherit the brand book because it's full no-code. I don't want to throw low-code and code-based systems under the bus at all, but my observation in e-commerce has been that typically you have a lot of crust that builds up, and then the platform gets blamed, or the platforms, plural. Even though the platforms are probably not really the problem, but when you have a collection of a variety of things coming together, even if those things individually are high quality, the intermingling of those things has no way of being controlled from a centralized way. So what we decided to do was, taking inspiration from things like Google's performance budgets, we thought, hey, what if we impose a reasonable performance framework on everything that has to live within a site? Uh-huh. So that means that if you want to add some script, you can do that. But it's, you got to choose where and when does this actually need to load, and it's not going to load the rest of the time. That gets away from your king of the hill problem where vendors are like scrambling to get into the first load of the page and so on. It also deals with things like, okay, we have to stick it into GTM, Google Tag Manager, because otherwise we won't be able to control where it goes. Hey, GTM's great. It's asynchronous. Problem, GTM's getting blocked by more ad blockers these days. So we're dealing with this constant problem of the one and the many, or maybe a better formulation of that would be like, how do I have what I need and have that thing be good enough, but also able to change? And so we found that you can do it with no code these days. And I'm excited about that for the same reason that I'm excited about tools like Canva or Webflow or Figma. Like you said, like it's one thing to work in a native operating system tool, and those are probably better. Let's just be honest. Like even now they're better. Like you can't use After Effects in a browser and expect it to be as good as your like super high-end workstation. But if you can do something in the browser, that means that the person next to you probably will be able to figure it out too. And I think that's pretty special.
Yeah, and I think that was always one of the complaints about anything headless was the fact that you needed to be, first of all, you oftentimes would need an internal dev team in addition to probably an agency to give you a hand, because it was a massive heavy lift. And I liken it to building out a system integration in Python as a fully custom integration versus an iPaaS platform where I've got a drag and drop workflow builder where I can create in Make, for example. I can now drag and drop, and I've got default endpoints, and it understands the API calls that need to be made to achieve certain things in that workflow, that data workflow. But to me, who's not a coder, I can visually drag and drop. I can visually create those workflows and those forks in the road where I want data to go to one place or to another, to grab data from one place and shunt it somewhere else. And I almost feel like we're now getting to a place where headless we're not quite there yet, I would say, but I think we're rapidly getting to a point where headless is accessible to all. Headless used to be really only available for the largest, most complex brands with the most technical capability in-house and also with some pretty shit-hot, usually agency partners to help them and do the initial build and maintenance and integration of the front end. And I feel like with platforms like Nyla, we're now at a place where implementing a headless front end with those pre-integrations to the core commerce backend is getting almost as easy as standing up and configuring a Shopify site and paying $200 for a theme and enabling it, getting up and running, change the logo, change the default colors, the color palette, and the default theme settings, and getting up and running very quickly. Whereas that didn't used to be the case even 1, 2, 3 years ago. Headless was just not accessible. And what I would tell my clients is typically, look, are you ready to spend 2 to 3 times as much on a headless implementation as a monolithic implementation? And are you ready for the project to take probably at least 2 times as long to get up and running? And then are you ready for the much, much higher TCO associated with a headless implementation? Are you ready for that? And if you are, and what you think you do is so friggin' special and also needs incredibly high performance, then by all means, let's go down and let's architect it that way. But it feels like you are effectively massively lowering the barrier to entry of a headless solution on Shopify.
Yeah, it's funny. We don't even use the word headless when we're talking to people because we figured, what do brands need? What do e-commerce companies need? They need revenue. They need margin. They need conversion rate. Like, these are familiar things. In e-commerce, we're really good at inventing new terms and like acronyms and stuff. And even if it's just like a word like headless, okay, what's this new thing? What we found is, and I think this is true of any new technology adoption cycle, but it's got to be 10 times better, at least in one way. I think that one of those innovation books said that, The Innovator's Dilemma, or one of those, forgive me, I'm getting it wrong, but you don't have to be like 100 times better at everything. You just need to be at least 10 times better at something really important. So we said, okay, let's do it where it's 10 times better at a couple of things, because why not? What we found is you can build a Nyla site that doesn't look like a theme and is super high end, and all Nyla sites are in the top 6% of fastest e-commerce sites in the world, but you can do that in 100 hours as opposed to 100 hours to 1,000 hours. So to me, that's like almost 10x. Okay, cool. Speed and performance. So we're all Nyla sites very consistently pass Core Web Vitals. which is not something that could be said of most platforms. And that's going to be more and more important as Google continues to push on that like they used to with SEO back in the day. So I think we're running at a 3x right now. So I'm pretty happy with that. I wish that was a 10x. But if I'm a brand, I want, the main thing I think I want, I've never owned a brand, I'm just imagining, is I want a site and an experience that I can control, speak my voice as a brand and to that I can do what I want, basically. And I want that to not be too painful or expensive to have that. And I want it to be better over time. So what do I have to do? What service, hardware, tech mix? That's really what I want. So with Naira, what we found is that your time to something cool is better. And ability to actually make cool changes over time is also better. And I know that's not like a real metric, but that's what I look at. So like we could talk about how much faster things are, how much cheaper they are, what your ROI is. And that's all important. And we have all those numbers. But what we found is when we were going out to market the first year of the company, we were like, hey, check out this conversion rate gain. This is incredible. This would be equivalent to multiple years of really expensive conversion rate optimization. And it was just getting lost in the mix because it was a number. And like, we know about stats that you can make stats look any way you want. But also, it wasn't really getting at the main thing that people needed to experience or feel, which is, this is actually moving me forward. Like, the main thing I want to happen in this industry is I want businesses and founders and investors to be able to like see things progressing. And there's a reason why A/B testing fell off for a long time. There's a reason why landing pages weren't a thing for 10 years. It's because it was just hard to do. And now that it's not hard to do, whether you're using Naira or any other, let's iterate these businesses that we're building. Because I think that's the coolest thing of all. It's like you use your creative and your intuition, but then you bring in some data. And then now that's where you start to get the 1% better over time, compounding effects, network effects, and so on.
Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening. And how do you think of yourself in the context of Shopify Hydrogen / Oxygen? How do you think of yourself in the context of something like Shogun Frontend, which has now been shut down? How do you think of yourself in the context of Fabric or some of the other front end as a service platforms? That there, it feels like there is still an uncertain pathway to where this headless future is ultimately going to end up. And I realize it's never going to stop. We're always going to be iterating on technology. There is no destination. It's a journey. But how do you think of yourself in the context of a platform like Shopify that is actively trying to put you out of business with their own headless front end solution? And also, how do you think of yourself in the context of, okay, it's great. We allow, effectively, we're creating Lego for e-commerce front ends. That's amazing. We've got these core components. We can snap these together in multiple configurations. We can take the same bucket of Legos and create a completely different end result by putting them together in different ways. But we also, in some respects, lose some of the benefits of a monolithic Shopify implementation because, for example, the app ecosystem in Shopify allows people to install these apps and almost every single, in fact, I can't remember a Shopify project I've been associated with in the last decade that didn't have at least 20 apps installed. And they've got that app framework that automatically exposes certain front-end sections, for example, through the standard theme engine of Shopify. Now you lose some of that default plumbing, you lose some of that inherent functionality in any standalone front-end platform system like Naira. So how do you reconcile those elements of what you guys are trying to build?
Great question. So I ask this question of myself all the time. And my answer is there's a couple different facets. So one, I don't know that Shopify is actually trying to put us out of business directly in the sense that Shopify is still perpetuating a developer-focused delivery model. And I think that's great. I actually have nothing against developers. I love working with developers. I wish I could do more development, but there is still a benefit to being able to work in a more direct path that doesn't require touching code. And so I think Nyla is a good alternative, but we definitely don't say that Nyla is for everyone. In fact, we've been very clear since day one that we're focused around certain verticals. And I would say it's easy to find edge cases where we don't support. It's actually quite easy with any piece of technology if you try hard enough. But this is where open source is fantastic, for example, if you really need the power of open source. I'm just listening to a podcast recently about why open source AI is really important. I totally agree with that. But sometimes it's convenient to be able to build with Lego style situations. Maybe Shopify will build something like that at some point. But at this point, I haven't seen any evidence that they're trying to push for an actually no code future. On the ecosystem side, and this is really important, and this is honestly like one of the big ways that I was scratching my head originally, which was Shopify now has way more than 7,000, I think at the time it was like 7,000 apps in the ecosystem, but it's like a lot of honestly really good apps. There's a ton of awesome apps in the ecosystem. How are we going to possibly support all of them? And so two things. One, we went, okay, A, we can't support all of them, clearly. B, which ones of those do people most want to use? And that we found was very pattern matchable for most categories of apps. If I ask you which email app you're going to use,
Klaviyo.
I know what you're going to tell me. It's going to be Klaviyo or it's going to be one of three other apps.
Yeah.
All of which are like pretty good. I like them. And I'm not an expert on email apps, but we didn't find that we needed to support from an official integration standpoint, every single app. What we did find was we definitely needed a way to support the ones that weren't on our official list of integrations. So what we did is we made what I like to call a no-code API. And it's my favorite part of the platform, actually, because it means the whole vendor lock thing, hey, I'm not going to be able to use my apps anymore. That's a huge problem, right? Like if you're an e-commerce business, I think we found the stats, like 86% of Shopify using companies rely on third-party apps for essential functions for their company, which is great. It means that it's a healthy ecosystem. But at the same time, those Shopify apps are often one of the main reasons why your site's so slow and so clunky. So what we said is, okay, wait, we can devise a framework whereby apps can basically be injected in specific structured ways in a very similar way, interestingly, to the way Shopify is allowing for app and functionality extension in things like the checkout, customer area, and so on. So using like modern dependency injection style approaches makes it to where we as a no-code system can actually allow for third-party code to be injected, but still in ways that protect the performance of a website. So for example, let's say that you come out with a really cool app and I'm just going to assume that it's going to be called JSON.AI. There's probably already JSON.AI, and you say, hey, Nyla, where's my integration? And we say, oh, check it out. What do you need to do? Let's see. There's only three things apps typically need to do. One, data.io. You need to know about some data, some tags, some data layer events, something like that. Or you need to pipe some data in so that can either inform the experience or maybe integrate or something like that. Two, you need widgets. You need the ability to change the UI. You need to be able to express the content of that data in interesting ways. Or three, some combination of the above, or like pop-ups and things like that. And we went, oh, wait, that can all be predictively mapped. So we can say, okay, your app needs to pipe a new entity. Let's call it the JSON entity. And we need to have JSONs coming in, and those need to be parsed out in this particular way. That can be structured. And this is all normal ETL, data management, data manipulation stuff. And the predictive power of a no-code system is incredible because it means that you can integrate with things that allow now for business logic. The problem with low-code is you don't really know what is going to be coming at you. And you have to be able to accept the largest sample size of anything that might be thrown at you, regardless of what it is. And it might be super high-quality input coming at you. Hopefully it is. But with no-code, you can say, hey, we can only expect these things. And we know where we start and stop. But as long as those are the right things, then it becomes very easy to integrate things.
Nice. I like it. And how do you think about AI in the context of Nyla? How do you think... So just to tell you, I'm pretty frustrated that I can't talk to most of my software and have a conversation with it, even today. And I'm pretty frustrated that ChatGPT is non-conversational. It's question and answer. And I'm pretty frustrated that it can't be like a business analyst and actually ask me questions. And refine my prompts by asking me smart questions. Like, why is it not, why can I not yet have a two-way dialogue software with software like I'm having a two-way dialogue with you and describe what I want to happen and describe what I need to happen and just have it do it behind the scenes? And I think we're getting ever closer to that. And I think large language models are going to make that possible within the next, you know, 6 to 18 months. That's going to become a much more common thing. But I can't, like, I can't talk to Xero today, for example, my accounting software, and I can't say, okay,
I want to Xero uses.
Yeah, so why can't I say, why can't I say, let's go into the reconciliation screen. Yeah, reconcile that with that, reconcile that with that. Cool, do this, and just tell it everything I want to do, and it just executes it. And I think that's becoming more possible. And so that verbal interaction, like I would go and talk to a developer, like I would go and talk to an engineer, I should be able to have that two-way dialogue with a large language model and it be able to execute on my behalf. And so how do you think of AI in terms of it potentially disrupting your own business and potentially also adding massive firepower to Nyla as well? So it feels like AI is moving so quickly that it feels like a double-edged sword to almost every tech vendor out there right now.
And we did something really, I think, pretty cool last year where we took vanilla ChatGPT, I think it was 3.5 at the time, and then we took it. It had just come out with the ability to create your own plugins or something like that. I can't remember the exact terminology, but we plugged it without creating a vector database directly into our data structures and created a little interface. And then we just wanted to see whether it could basically understand our data structures, because it's no code, which means it's plain English, and LLMs are really good at plain English stuff and good at code, but they're even better at plain English. And I was absolutely blown away by what could happen immediately without training anything, without having the vector database. You're like, hey, Nyla, can you please add a button here? And what it would do is it would go and it would be like, okay, I know what you meant with the NLP meaning of adding a button, but I don't know, like, how would I add a button in Nyla, because I'm just ChatGPT. And it would go and it would look through our database and find like an example of a button. You're like, oh, that's how a button works. Okay. Bing. And it would add a button. Now, that wasn't that impressive because we've seen that kind of thing before, but the thing that blew my mind was it was able to figure out, in some cases, like what to do if its first try didn't work. So we were like, hey, can you add some columns, like an image over here and put some text over here? And now if we step back for a second and think hierarchical structures, to have some columns, as a human, you'd be like, yeah, you probably need a thing called columns plural that you can stick columns into, right? Like a div, if we're thinking developers. But we just said that in plain English. We didn't say, can you add some columns into a new entity called column? Or I think it got that wrong. Column A and column B should be inside a thing called columns. Now, what the AI was able to do is it went and it tried adding just a column, and it wouldn't take, right? Because we made a thing that wouldn't allow you to just add a column. It has to be inside columns. And then it went, oh, okay, that didn't work. Let me try it again. This is without any user input. Went back and was like, oh, okay, it looks like columns have to be like, a column needs to be inside a columns container.
It needs to be nested, basically.
Yeah. And it figured that out with any input. And then I went, oh boy, this is crazy. So to answer your question, AI is like a smart 12-year-old, in my opinion, at this point, which means it'll try a couple times. It'll still tap out at some point, possibly. But it can save you so much time. And so I think it will, like, all tools now have an AI assistant and thing like that, right? We're more looking at what would Midjourney for experience design be like? Because if you type something in a Midjourney, it generates something amazing, but it's not like you can interact with that thing. And
yes,
we're starting to see video AI stuff, but like that kind of thing for actual web experiences. And that's what we're working towards.
And Midjourney's not great. Platforms like Midjourney can't iterate. They will regenerate from scratch. You tweak the input and it completely regenerates the output. You can't say, leave it exactly like it is, but tweak this one thing. Because what it's doing is it's taking the input and needs to reinterpret all of that input to generate a single output. And I think that level of iterative capability within large language models, it leaves a lot to be desired still. For example, in the case of Nyla, if I said, okay, I want this screen to look like this, I want there to be a button there, and I want it to behave like this, and then I want it to lead to this, and I want it to bring in this piece of data from X system, and then I want people to be able to interact with it like this, and this is the colors that I want, et cetera, et cetera. If it generated that, then what we don't want is to then say, I just want to move that one thing, and then it goes shit, and it regenerates the whole page. And it's shit, I actually loved those three components that it did before. So I think iteration is something that has to get better.
our Copilot. I love the Microsoft Copilot demo. This was last year. Remember when they were showing off the early version of the PowerPoint Copilot? And she's, hey, make me a presentation for my daughter's graduation ceremony. And Copilot basically, I think in some fake way at the time, or maybe it was real, generated a presentation. But the key thing was it wasn't a PDF or like an image of a presentation. It was actually just a PowerPoint. And then she's able to go in and change things around. You have to be able to work back and forth with an assistant. And the best executive assistants in the world that I've talked to, well, I don't know how good they are, the ones I've talked to, but they seem pretty good. They were able to accept my input, but then they would, like you said earlier, ask questions, and then they would know how to start and stop. And if I was like, actually, I want to take this back onto my desk, but I need to put this on your desk, they could do this whole, it's like managing a complex cooking environment. You have to be able to give and take and communicate. No, it's not black boxy. That's the main thing that we can't do with AI anymore. So, oh, it's just automagical.
Yes. No.
It's got to act like a real agent that's able to communicate with other real agents called me and called you.
Yes.
So I think that's 3-4 years out before we have actually super awesome full experience development where you can just give an AI a bank account and some a name, and then it can just go and build a business for you.
Yeah.
But it's not that much farther out than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. It's exciting. And I love how you're not, you're not that opinionated on how AI could potentially disrupt your business or how AI could benefit your business and therefore your business's customers, because it's moving so fast. I love the fact that your curiosity around this shines through, that you're not opinionated.
Thanks.
And you're not saying, oh, this is exactly how it's going to work. This is how we're going to leverage AI. This is how we're going to expose it to our customers. And this is the benefit. And this is how we can continue to grow our market share, for example. I think that anybody that says that, at least as of today, is going to struggle just because the space is moving too fast to form us. I don't even have a solid opinion about exactly how AI is going to ultimately impact commerce, because I think ultimately it's going to change the face of commerce forever in ways that I can't even imagine yet. And I'm staying curious. And look, I've seen game-changing stuff happen to our industry probably 3 or 4 major times, mobile being one of them. I think standardization on HTML, CSS, JS, I think is another massive transformation of our industry. I think standards are a very good thing. I think they show adoption. I think VR and AR struggle with adoption because there are no standards yet. There are no universal standards for VR and AR. I think once standards, we've got AR kit, and then we've got stuff for Android.
Interesting. So can we riff on that for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
So the VR and AR thing, I agree there's not standards, but there's, feel like it's mostly this big clunky thing on your head problem.
Yep. Yep.
Now it's doing stars or whatever.
Yeah. Hearts. I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even know how Riverside does that. I don't even know how to turn it on or turn it off. So it's super interesting.
I get what you're saying. I just feel like the form factor is also a problem there. I was playing around with the Apple Vision Pro the other day and thinking, wow, this is a game changer. If I'm willing to live with this thing on, remember those old like slide things where you go like this?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What were those things called?
Yeah, they were called. Yeah, I know. They're called. Oh man, I know. I had two of them. I had one of the original versions, the viewer, what are they called? They're called something viewer. And they had the little, they had the little round things that slid into it, and then it would rotate them one by one.
And that's what it felt like. And I thought, okay, either we have to wait for Elon to finish doing Neuralink and get that through FDA somehow. And then that'll be great. Then you can just think it, right? But I think, total tangent. But my first thought when I used Apple Vision Pro was, oh no, like websites are over. My job is pointless. And then I was like, wait a second. Now, people love experiences. And I really love this idea of satisfying experiences. And in our industry, satisfying purchasing experiences. If you're buying like some paper or some tissue, you probably just want the same thing you got last time. And ideally, Amazon already knows what you wanted and just got it to your house. So you didn't have to do anything. If you're going on a nice vacation or buying a Porsche or something, you want to be part of that experience. And
yeah,
if we're solving for a satisfying purchasing experience, the form factor does matter less. The involvement of the AI matters a little bit less. But the fact that we're going to be going through life in a curiosity-driven way as humans, I think, always going to be true. I don't see that going away.
And headless doesn't mean, and your platform doesn't, it doesn't mean that it only, so as of today, Nyla only builds 2D front ends that are designed for the web browser. But that doesn't mean Nyla will always only build and only have the Lego blocks for a web browser based experience. It could have 100%, a fully immersive, it could have the building blocks for a fully immersive VR experience. And you're just adding to the toolkit of Nyla to be able to facilitate that.
I would like Nyla to become the language of commerce. And that, that can take any form factor, essentially. And language is simply how we describe reality. And now Siri is not that great, but hopefully Apple, nudge, make Siri better, please. But when Siri came out, remember that? Oh, I can talk to my computer. Yeah, we're going to be talking to everything. And we're going to be typing. It's going to be multimodal, right? It's
going to
be multimodal.
Yes.
It's going to be something where I can learn as I go, like games.
Yes.
It's going to be something where it's fun and engaging. And also sometimes I just need to get in, get out. Did you buy one of those Rabbit R ones?
No, but I did see a demo of it online, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for mine to arrive, but the whole, I just wanted to talk to a thing and I don't have to browse a screen. That's true a lot of the time. Once I've already done the browsing and know how it works.
And I've already connected to all the services that I want to talk to.
Yeah, but it only works if I already know how to use Spotify, if I already know what Google Drive is. So we're going to need, and maybe it's not going to be a website, but we're going to need visual interfaces and audio interfaces and predictive purchasing, like all these things we've been talking about in commerce for so long. We're always going to need that stuff. It's just going to continue to evolve. And that's exciting to me.
I love it. I love it. And how do you guys make your money? You are a SaaS platform. Technically, you're a SaaS platform. And it's so do people subscribe to you similar to how they would subscribe to a Shopify? And do you have like tiers, or is it based on number of pages? Or how do you guys make your money as a business?
Exactly. So we're a typical venture-backed SaaS company where we have fees that you pay depending on your level of service. And it usually people will ROI in one of three different ways, either through direct conversion rate gain, through cost savings on their typical app stack, and for through just a variety of cost savings on this, or the build time that takes it to do things. But yeah, the main thing to know is we don't feature gate anything. We believe that it's really important to be able to just dive in and learn things, and you can have an unlimited number of users. And hey, do you hate the app? You can uninstall it. Like, it's non-destructive to your Shopify. I think the best software in the world doesn't constrain you or force you into a box or make you have to think a certain way or do certain things. It's permissive-based marketing, right? Hey, here's the thing we made. Maybe it'll be helpful for you. If it's not, no worries. But yeah, it's a typical SaaS model, and it comes with hundreds of high-grade templates that are directly 1% D2C inspired. So if one day you wake up and say, hey, I really want to do my homepage differently, you don't have to do a 6-month or 3-month or 2-week design loop. You say, oh, let me try a few things that inherit your brand, looks great. So it's great for waking up on a Monday and wanting to do a quick promotion you haven't planned, but it's also great over Black Friday and to say, you know what? We're going to do something that's really complicated. We're going to use all these promotions and apps and hopefully not too much of dog and pony shit. And I think that's what people want to do, is be able to change their website easily. And yeah, complex stuff still going to require agencies and developers and freelancers. Of course it will. But as soon as something becomes easier, it's not like you do less of it. You do more of it.
Yes.
That's what I think is so cool in this world, is we're getting to a point where almost anybody can do a lot of things pretty easily, but they can then see that, hey, I don't know how to do this myself, but I still feel empowered to pass off to somebody else, delegate to do this in an even more advanced way. But yeah, I think we're getting to an interesting place in the world, and I can't wait to see more and more agencies and brands, and honestly, just e-commerce people in general, adopt a no-code future that doesn't require them to feel constrained.
Yep, love it. And I don't see any pricing on your website. So is it basically inquire for pricing? It's an enterprise. You're treating it like an enterprise platform where you negotiate pricing on a customer basis? Or is there like a standard pricing matrix that you have based on certain tiers?
We do have a standard pricing matrix, and we should probably put it up there. We just changed it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a little more than 3 cups of coffee per month, but it's a lot less than any other alternative out there for
what we're doing. And if you look out over the next, say, 12 to 18 months, what's high on your priority list in terms of the additional functionality that you want to bring to Nyla? And secondarily, do you guys, when, let's say I run Shopify today and I install the Nyla app, does it effectively create a reverse proxy as soon as you install the app so that effectively all the traffic gets routed to Nyla? Is that kind of how architecturally we get the traffic starting to go to Nyla instead of the Shopify front end?
Yeah. So starting with that, the second question first, currently we're using Cloudflare for DNS basically. So we don't have the full DNS level orchestrated down to that level yet. And part of that has to do with the fact that it needs to be like a Shopify app. But just think of it as an A record that points to a different
oh, yeah. key address. Okay. We can just point it to the Nyla IP.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then to answer your other question, the main thing that we've found is that when we can save people time on doing cool things, that's their favorite thing ever. So dev is great, but it can take a lot of time. Great. So how can you compress that or make that take less time? Okay. Design. What about design? There's this kind of inefficient loop where you go into Figma and then you design things and then you have to translate those things that you just made into exactly the same looking things in a completely different structure. And I think that's a little silly. So we made a super powerful design tool where you can design directly now. And it's pretty insane because you can just move twice as fast. But the next thing that we're going to do is try and make those starting points, those boilerplates, those 80% of the way there things really immersive to where you can basically say, hey, I want to launch a new brand. It's going to be, I'll pick on a brand, Mother Den, but I want to do like a Hello Kitty anime vibe with some cottagecore. And you should be able to go through a few clicks of onboarding and say, I like this brand, this one, here's my brand book, and blah, 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 blah. And you know what? A lot of that doesn't even need any AI. It's literally just saying, oh, I see what that is. Okay, that kind of pattern matches. It's using some low-level AI, like computer vision, but like the tooling that we're actually using and that most companies actually need to have something super progressive, a lot of that tooling's been around for 10 years. And it's literally plugging it in the right way with the right UI. And I don't want to diminish the value of what we're building or what other people are building. And I think some of the things we're doing are like super leading edge. But honestly, it's about good UI, being able to do the things you need to do. And if you need to do more stuff, you know what? Totally respect that. And if you find that Nyla's not for you, that's fine too. But for 80%, 90% of brands that we talk to, we don't actually run into, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have that feature. That used to be a huge problem. But it's like the Apple ecosystem. Nobody jailbreaks their phone anymore. Why would you need to do that? It's good. It's awesome. You could probably need to get super advanced. I don't even know how hard it would be to jailbreak your phone, but that used to be a huge feature of Android. Hey, you can break away from this ecosystem thing. And now I'm thinking, you know what? That's not the point anymore. Good ecosystems foster the ability for you to move faster at the end of the day. And yeah, there's going to have to be some little trade-offs here and there, but you know what? That's what we all did when we moved from on-prem or self-hosted e-com to SaaS e-commerce. That's what we all know we're going to have to do in the future when we delegate part of our processing to AI. And sorry to go all dystopian there real quick, but like in the future where we have AI pre-processing our emails, that's what Google's doing with spam filter already, right? You know what? We're going to need more time. We're going to need more efficiency. And so I like coding, but I'm planning on doing less writing individual characters that I might get slightly wrong and much more using modern frameworks, much more using modern tooling. Yeah, that's my summary statement.
I love it. I love it. And how do you like people to get a hold of you? I'll drop your LinkedIn link and Nyla link in the show notes. But other than that, if people want to reach out and have a chat to you about no-code, low-code Shopify solutions. App.
Absolutely. I'd love to do teardowns. I love this stuff. This is not only my job, it's my hobby. Michael@Nyla.app, NYLA, which does stand for New York, LA. A lot of those cool brands.
I did not know that. That is a great, I love the name. And I love the coast to coast concept of this, bridging the gap.
Yeah, it's East Coast turnaround, West Coast vibes.
I love it. I love it. That is amazing. Now, Michael, I appreciate your time. We've had a fantastic conversation and hours absolutely flown by. You're so engaging. You're so passionate about what you do. And I love meeting people that are passionate about what they're doing in the world. But now we're at the point where I get to flip the script. I get to hand the microphone over to you. I get to let you ask me one question, any question you like. Can be personal or professional. So Michael Bauer from Nyla, what's your question for me today?
So this is a real question, first of all. You have spent a ton of time in all aspects of e-commerce, but you're especially an expert when it comes to B2B.
Yes.
This is something I'm thinking about. We're mostly D2C focused, although we have some B2B support. What is the single most important concept from B2B that you wish D2C brands understood better?
A two-way ongoing conversation with the customer. I think that B2B is very good at creating a really strong relationship for the long term with their customers, and they invest massive amounts of time, money, energy, love into that relationship because they know that the AOVs are higher. They know the LTVs are higher. They know it's so hard to onboard a new B2B customer and vice versa. It's hard to become onboarded with a supplier that both sides are making a massive investment in the relationship and they need it to work for the long term to have a payoff for both sides. And I think D2C and B2C completely misses that mindset. And they're always in the new customer acquisition mindset. And I'm not saying that even if they get religion about relationship, that they will not need to acquire new customers. We know they will. But I think that B2C and D2C brands are so used to push communications. They're used to pushing out emails. They're used to pushing out SMSs. They're used to this push level of communication at scale, highly segmented, highly planned, trying to get to that one-to-one place of outbound communication, but they very rarely create in an environment where the customer gets to talk to them. And I think that one of the things D2C brands can do to fix this problem is to say, look, we have, I don't know, 10 people on our customer service team. They're busy 80% of the time or 85 or 90% of the time utilization, but there's 5, 10, 15% of the time when they're just waiting for an inquiry to come in or they're waiting for the next thing to do. No, get on the phone and call your customers. Have a dialogue with them. Give them a chance to talk to you. Give them a chance to vent. Give them a chance to tell you what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. Why did they buy through you? Why did, you know, do they love that thing that they just got from you? Oh, you haven't bought from us in 6 months. Why? Up until now, you've been buying every 6 months religiously from us and you stopped a year ago. Why? I think that there is not enough reaching out for specifically for the purpose of opening an environment for a dialogue with the customer. In the B2C world, D2C world, it just doesn't happen. I almost never, ever see that. To the point where in the B2C and D2C world, if we want to get feedback from our customer, we send them an NPS form and ask them 3 questions. And even that is an outbound push form of communication. And it is all for our benefit as opposed to for their benefit. And I really think that B2C brands, D2C brands are just missing a massive opportunity because they do not create an opportunity for a real-time two-way dialogue with the customer.
That's tricky, right? Because that means it has to be somewhat free-form potentially.
100%. You have to scale the unscalable.
Free-form is like choose between three things. My problem is not those three things. Yeah. Can I ask you a follow-up on that?
Yeah.
There's all this talk in e-commerce about post-purchase and retention, which I think is great and important. But B2B, the pre-purchase is actually really amazingly important. And this is not, I don't know who this is. I definitely know who this is, but they haven't actually paid me money yet.
Yes.
And I don't even have a purchase order yet. I remember we had this thing a few years ago before I was doing Nyla. We made this like B2B front-end thing for Shopify and normal themes. It was actually pretty cool. And it was all about this back and forth that you'd have to do before you even knew what the exact basically line items were going to be. Because you didn't know which SKU it was going to be until you had this back and forth. It was kind of pain. And I went, oh, wow. Huh. And so as you're talking to us now, I'm thinking, I wonder if there's like a part of the customer journey we're missing in D2C, which is that before I buy, we're trying to smash it into like search and discovery tooling or like quizzes when it should be, I don't know, like a preform conversation.
I 100% agree. And I try to describe it like this. In the physical world, if I walk into a jewelry store, for example, and if I walk up to the counter at a jewelry store, the person behind the counter doesn't just grab a tray of jewelry and chuck it on the counter and say, hey, look at these cool things. They ask me like 5 or 6 qualifying questions. Are you here shopping for yourself or for someone else today? Are you shopping for a specific occasion? Do you have a specific budget in mind? When do you need to make this purchase by? Do you have a favorite stone? Do you have a favorite metal? They ask you all these qualifying questions. And then, and only then, do they pull 2, 3, 4, 5 things, put it out on the felt, and then put it out to show you, and then talk you through that journey. And I feel like it's almost by a girl some flowers first, for God's sake. It feels like in e-commerce, we are going for the throat of the purchase when in actuality, so we make a massive assumption that when someone comes to our website, they already know what they want. And in many cases, they don't. They have a very broad or general idea of what they want, but oftentimes they don't have a very specific idea of what they want because they don't know how those needs could be met and what options they have. And I just think we make so many massive assumptions in the e-commerce world when someone comes to buy from us that we just do not create space for that to breathe a little bit, for that to have a dialogue, for that. It's not like the B2B world. You described it perfectly. That CPQ, that configure price quote thing, is a big piece of the B2B world.
I didn't know that was called that.
Yeah, it's called configure price quote. And there's platforms and technologies. That's all they do is CPQ.
Totally,
because it is that important to the B2B buying experience, especially when you're talking very technical products. And I think we need an equivalent of a stripped down, clean version of that for the D2C and B2C world. And I don't know exactly what that needs to look like, but I think brands make too many assumptions when somebody gets to their website.
We were working on a thing recently where a lot of D2C brands, especially in beauty, which is one of our big industries we focus on, they have a quiz or some type of hey, let's try and understand your needs a little bit better. And it's missing some of the things you just said usually, but at least they end up with a little something. And one of the things that they do is, great, thanks for all that information. Here's the products you should probably buy. Would you like to save this? And if you click yes, it sends an email to you and that's it. It stops there. It doesn't even end up in your profile. So
yes.
We were thinking about that and saying, wait a second, you just literally told us what your color is going to be, or we calculated your shade or your favorite combination. And then that's all we're going to do?
Yeah.
How about when you come to the product page, how about we pre-select that shade? How about when, we've all maybe, not all of us, so if you've ever tried to buy an auto part, first thing they ask you is what your make model, right? Because There's so many products that you might need, but now it's super nice. I know if I browse around, this is going to be for my 94 Acura.
Yeah. If I put in my plate or my VIN or whatever.
Yeah. And so I think this is, here's the funny thing. There's a thing in Klaviyo, for example, not to push Klaviyo as a solitary platform, but most platforms have this where if your quiz, let's say, it's a tactical example for everybody. Okay. If you have a quiz that's powered by Octane AI or one of these apps.
Or Jebit or something.
It has the ability to dump out into Klaviyo or your email program. And it's going to know those answers to those questions that you ask people and the products that you recommended so that you can use that in your post and your follow-ups, your retargeting emails, what have you. But there's actually ways you can sync that information that was captured back into your ESP, your e-commerce platform, what's it called? ECP.
Yep.
And then you can use that there. So you can actually use this data. We're good at collecting data in e-commerce. First party data. This is one of the greatest industries ever to collect first party data.
Sure
is. Industries would die to have this data that we collect on a day-to-day basis. And then we do almost nothing with it.
And correct.
It's bonkers to me. So I think you're right. We got to make these the first experience, it needs to be great before you buy something. And I do think I've gone back and forth on this one, but should you ask for an email when you're capturing that initial data? Maybe just so that I can send it to you.
But why, when you present it back to the customer, why don't you ask the question, would you like to open up a video chat with one of our personal shopping concierges right now? Would you like to talk a little bit more about
this? My brand hat is going to be like, oh, that's too expensive. We don't have these people. There's just not any bother.
Ignore this huge
opportunity.
And what we know is that live chat and video chat where somebody's specifically asking about a product or a range or has a product question, the conversion rates are in the 90 percentile range because they've shown such high intensifying.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah,
I've seen some brands that I've worked with closely. They have done the thing that you talked about with your support or your kind of success team. If they're not currently inundated with tickets, you can switch if you're using Gorgeous Chat or something like that. You can switch that into, call it proactive chat, what's more sales oriented.
Assisted sales.
Assisted sales, yeah. And whether you pick up the phone, if it's that type of a customer relationship or chat, either way, and it converts fantastically well. And so you're literally using the same resources they already have.
Correct.
So we're not talking about rocket surgery. We're talking about using tools that you're probably already using. And not doing something that's crazy complicated, but just taking a little bit of time, dialing it in. And you don't have to switch your tech stack to do that.
Correct. We're actually talking about having empathy. That's what I call it. I talk at the average conversion rate, 3%, whatever it is, roughly, depending on vertical. I just think doing the right thing is the right thing. And I think that a lot of brands, they have lost their way in the pursuit of specific KPIs or OKRs or whatever it might be. They need to become more high-level thinkers than that in order to differentiate themselves from their competitors. Instead of pursuing this button or this color change or this fucking, how about we actually just have empathy for our customers? We actually just show some appreciation for them. And we try to create the most amazing, because this screen can be extremely sterile. There's a reason why 70 to 80% of retail spend is done in stores, because it's not sterile, because it's touch, it's feel, it's visceral.
Yeah, all of us that thought that e-commerce and COVID had made all purchasing e-commerce, I don't think so.
Yeah. So the only way I know to really stand out and really to differentiate yourself now in the B2C and D2C world is to care more and not less, and to do more shit that seems unscalable, to do more of that shit. That to me is how you stand out, because everybody's trying to be more efficient, do more with less, more ChatGPT, more, less humans, less interaction, less personal service. They're trying to personalize it at scale through technology, when actually I think if we can have the technology help the people giving our customers service to help make them more efficient, that to me is where we need to scale, not scale and automate human touch points. I think we need to keep the human touch points human instead of automating them out of existence.
That's such a great point. You really raised some ideas that I need to think through. At this point, it's really hard in D2C and some other spaces right now with your unit economics being forced down. But why are you doing this? If you've started a brand, you started a company, or you have a company you're responsible for, there's something there that people love. And we don't want to take that loved part and just strip that out.
Correct. And it's again, I think it's just, we have to show more respect for people that are considering spending money with us. We just have to, because the thing is, acquisition used to be cheap and it used to be easy. It is no longer cheap and easy. And the problem is, we programmed our businesses to treat potential customers as disposable because they were. When acquisition was cheap and easy, when digital acquisition was cheap and easy, we treated every lead the same. We treated every visitor the same. We treated every opportunity the same, because it was distilled down to a CPM. It's not that way anymore. So we have to appreciate customers more now. That's my take.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Mate, this has been such a fun conversation, and I can't wait to do it again soon. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.